This episode is brought to you by Interactive Brokers. And I want you to discover the future of trading with IBKR Desktop, Interactive Brokers' next generation trading platform. Built from the ground up, IBKR Desktop combines a ton of powerful features with a unique set of groundbreaking trading tools in a streamlined, intuitive interface. With access to over 150 markets, IBKR Desktop puts global stocks, options, futures, currencies, bonds, and funds at your fingertips. Plus, IBKR Desktop includes innovative features like multi-sort, which lets you sort data using multiple factors simultaneously. And that helps you quickly identify trading opportunities. And they also have the options lattice, which visually highlights key metrics for smarter decisions. And whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, IBKR Desktop redefines what traders can expect from a trading platform. Experience the future of trading today. Download IBKR Desktop at ibkr.com/desktop. Interactive Brokers is a member of SIPC.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The market bounce continues. A few favorites of mine breaking out and doing pretty well. The U.S. dollar starts to roll. The question is, how long will that last? And our guest today is Frank Curzio from Curzio Research. All this and much more on episode number 868 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. My faves are moving after earnings. I got to tell you that. Hey, Andrew Horowitz here. And this is the Disciplined Investor Podcast, where we spend each and every week learning something new, particularly refining what we know about finance. And the whole point of this is to make sure that we are all ready for that day that we have to turn a savings game into an income game, where we have to look for our investments on top of other things, whether it's a pension, or it's maybe Social Security, and God willing, a big inheritance. That'd be fun. But aside from that, if we're not in that category where we're going to be getting some whopping inheritance one day, we have to rely on our own money. And that's what we do here each and every week, try to understand what's going on, not only in markets, but more broadly, what's happening in a financial sense, trying to make heads or tails. And the more you listen, the more it's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Or, you know, it doesn't make sense, but I understand it at least. When you first start listening to our show, I'm sure you're like, oh, wow, what is that? The lingo, the financial jargon. And then all of a sudden you realize one day, hey, I'm listening to all this and I didn't even think about it. It's kind of like exercising. It's like the first time you exercise, like, oh man, my muscles hurt. Then you do it for a while and you get stronger and your muscles don't hurt as much anymore. So we're exercising your financial side of your brain here each and every week. Listen, everything you need to know about what we do on a regular basis for our clients over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. If you want to contact me, have a meeting, get together, go over to the Contact Andrew or Ask Andrew, contact us, and we can spend some time together looking at your current situation and seeing how we can help to optimize your portfolio, your investing, your future, and all that goes along with that. So as I mentioned, some of my favorite stocks that we've been looking at and that we've held for clients that I own, a company, Toast, I've been talking this up a lot, has moved up very nicely after earnings. Even Celsius, we got to look at what's going on in China. And we talked about these a good amount on DH Unplugged. We spent a lot of time talking about these particular names. We have the game we do each and every week, myself and John C. Dvorak on Tuesdays. We launch Tuesday night a brand new episode every week on DH Unplugged. You can find it, of course, on any podcast app out there. But we're seeing what I would say is a good amount of love for stocks in general. And it's interesting, several of the names that were hated for a day or so that were kind of showing weakness in their results due to earnings have popped back. You look at, for example, look at Netflix. Right back to the level it was before the earnings crater. Meta. Pretty much the same thing. So we got to wonder, what are all these positive vibes all about? Why is it? Is it simply? Is it just simply like, hello, the Fed is going to eventually cut and inflation is eventually going to come down. Eventually the wars will end. Eventually we're going to tame this global warming situation. And the list goes on. All the worries that we have out there, right? Maybe is it simple as we're going to look past that? Because we don't have to deal with that right now. And we really need to plan for the future. And if we're focusing so much on what's right in front of our face, everything else gets blurry. So instead of doing that, let's do the opposite. Let's focus on the long term and blur out everything that's right in front of our face. Let's not deal with that. Let's put it aside. Let's say, you know what? That is important today, but it's not important in 5 years from now. What's important in 5 years from now is important in 5 years from now. It's really not important in 25 years from now. So let's maybe consider that. But more importantly, we're probably going to get our answers from our guest today. So how about we bring him in? Because when we spend time together, Frank and I, we can knock it out pretty well, and we could probably go for hours, but we're constrained to a shorter term on each and every podcast. So let's do that. And as promised, our guest today is Frank Curzio from Curzio Research. He's the founder, actually, of Curzio Research, which, as I would say, is a full suite of investing newsletters. And you can find more about this over on CurzioResearch.com. Also, Frank is a podcaster extraordinaire. Runs the Wall Street Unplugged podcast. Go get it if you can on every one of the greatest podcast repositories, apps out there. You'll find Frank Curzio, and you'll find him right here, right now. Frank, how are you?
Good. How's it going, man?
It's going really well. I want to start a little bit differently than we usually do, because usually we go right into this whole discussion of things. So let's back it up for a second. I know the story. We may have talked about it before, but I want to ask you two questions. First, how did you actually get into this? Give me the long version.
The long version is I was born into it, man. My late dad did it for 30 years. He used to have his own newsletter service. He also managed money. His claim to fame was calling the 1987 market crash the only person that called it in writing. Everybody says they called it. And back then, in 87, there was like 10, 12 people you listened to in CNBC. Mm-hmm. Not like it is today, with hundreds and hundreds of people with crazy opinions. But he actually, in his newsletter, he said a month before that crash, and he said this crash is going to be worse than the prior three combined.
Wow.
And he put out all the information on interest rates are high. It's crazy, because I have that newsletter and I give it to my subscribers to show them. And it relates to a lot of stuff that's going on today too. But and when he did that, we have a small office and it looked like, this big drug bust. There was about 10 vans outside. They were all like news vans. Like, who is this guy that called? And that was like his claim to fame. And then he was all over CNBC. I used to go to him as a kid, to Bloomberg, to go on TV. I was licking stamps, folding envelopes.
Little Frankie.
Yeah. Making $5 an hour and stuff, and just grew up in the business. And then, took it really seriously when he got sick. He passed from cancer a while ago. And then just picked his mind for like 2 years and everything, and really, focused and learn as much as I can, and just been in this ever since for like 30 years myself now.
I don't even know this answer. I really don't know this answer. And I don't know. Do you have subscribers that used to be his subscribers too?
A few.
Wow.
A few. Yeah. Great. I mean, even the stocks that he recommended in the past, like Tech Specific Land Trust in the single digits, like people still own, and that's like whatever it is, $2,000 or whatever it is. Churchill Downs, because they call them racinos, putting casinos for the first time ever into racetracks and stuff. So, he has some followers, but, this is a long time ago, and those guys are probably 75, 80, and I have a few of them that follow me still. But yeah, it's really cool. So I was born into this business. It's my blood, and I take it very, very seriously. So,
tell me about the stint with Cramer.
And Cramer. So I realized that in order to start my own business, I needed a little bit more experience. Cramer knew my dad. My dad knew a lot of people. I mean, he actually, knew Warren Buffett as well. And when I say he was like, Warren Buffett would be like, "Hey, Frank," sound like they talked on phone calls, but my dad had this small book he wrote, Awareness of Indirection, and he sent it to Buffett. And Buffett sent a letter and hand signed it, said, "Thank you," and signed. And I have that. This was before, like, he's as big as he is now, where you can't even get into his conferences. But I remember going on, and Buffett was on TV, and I was very, very young at the time. And, you know, my dad was really excited. I didn't know he was excited for him. You know, he shook Buffett's hand. He left. I said, Dad, why didn't you get his business card? And he was like, son, guys like that don't have business cards. So I was like, okay.
That's great.
Yeah, so it was really cool. So, yeah, it was awesome. You know, just growing up and understanding the business and knowing. So going to Kramer, it was cool. I went there. He, you know, had a little bit of an opening there and just became pretty much top research analyst. Was top research analyst. There were 4 or 5 of us there. There's 2 of us for that he listened to right when the show started. So the greatest thing about Kramer and working for him is for my dad was a value investor. Kramer's a growth investor. Mm-hmm. And then going and learning both of these styles, because, you know, people can say what they want about Kramer. The good thing from my perspective is we had to cover every single stock, every single sector, everything. So those 2,500 stocks he recommends a year, which they track, that's what Barron's tracks and everything. We had to know everything about them. And he was like, hey, I need you to go to this car. I need you to go see these guys. And we were right across the street from New York Stock Exchange. Like, go see them across, you know, they were launching their IPO and I had to go across the street and eating at New York Stock Exchange and the breakfast and everything. So the access that you had to people, to research, to everything working there, and the fact that we had to know everything about every stock, every sector, learning a whole thing about growth, which is incredible because I missed out on buying Netflix really early and Microsoft and Apple really early, which all had 100 PEs. I'm like, you're crazy, you know, and realize like, you know, how to buy growth companies, how, why growth is so important, why there's a reason why they're trading at higher multiples, and having that with the value aspect really taught me a lot about this business. And, been doing it ever since.
Very cool. What is it that you love about the business? I'm going to give you the other side. What is it that you hate about this business? And what I mean by that is the daily grind.
What I love about this business is helping people because they get, I don't want to curse on your podcast, but the F word, I would say on my podcast.
Screwed.
I mean, listen, SPACs were created to screw the retail investors, right? I mean, these guys made absolute fortune. They didn't have to.
So math, polyhypatia comes to mind.
My God. You got to go back and see because, it's not that I hate the guy, but he was promoting like, I'm going to be this forever. This is a long-term holding. Everyone's going to space. He was there for a year and a half and sold $300 million worth of stock.
Beautiful.
Okay, at 20 something. Right. Yeah. And they get warrants and pipe deals and all this crap. And this SPACs only work if you have the retail investor there that you could F. They could really,
yep.
Can I say it? I really want to say it, but
screw it.
I will say, but you know, we really screw them. And time and time again, you see this, like they're such at a disadvantage and it pisses me off. Even in a financial newsletter business where I'm in, right? Everyone's a guru. Everyone's great. You know, some people aren't even writing their newsletters. You know, it's crazy. I'm not like tearing apart people in my industry. Can't defend themselves, but this is personal to me. This is my life. I grew up in this. And when I see people getting screwed over, it really pisses me off.
When you say screwed, you mean they're getting, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. That's a good thing. Yeah. So, and you know, it's not just SPACs. It's everything else. I mean, look, you know, they say like they're going after crypto because they want to help people or whatever. You know, a lot of people made a lot of money in crypto and still making money in crypto, right?
Yep.
Crypto's doing pretty well. But yet, if you look at the same reasons why the CEO of Binance, he got 4 months, he shouldn't have got anything. I mean, he basically, if you look at the reasons, it was he didn't have the right requirements, the right structure, the right people in place and compliance, right? There's no fraud there or anything. Yet, there's fraud at the major banks. No one went to jail. No one paid, you know, the four,
let's
five,
not even
six
start that.
Billions, tens of billions in fines. But it's just like the rules are different for everyone. So
but in the end, the consumer gets, you know what I'm saying?
Yes. And they do. And what's frustrating is you have the SEC there. You know how much money was made from SPACs? I think like 80% of them are below, you know, down 75% plus, right? They're garbage, right? It was a way to package these companies, raise more money, inflate the valuations and sell this beautiful thing, put space on it, throw AI on it, throw all these buzzwords on it. People are going to buy it and they all crash. And what you didn't realize is when they came out $10, all these guys are in it, like 50 cents or a dollar, all these pipe deals. Right. So they're selling it. They don't even care if it goes down to 7, 6, 5. They're dumping it and right in your face. And it's just, you know, for me, that's what I love about this business, trying to help investors. And we're independent. Nobody pays me to recommend their company or whatever. So I tell it how it is. And I don't care who I offend if, you know, I'm telling the truth. And, right. And that's why we've built a big following. So that's one of the things I love and hate about the business is, you know, it's set up to take advantage and our regulators don't do anything about it. There's not one person who went in jail from the credit crisis. Not one person who went in jail. Even though all the fraud that, I mean, Bank of America opened up fake accounts and triple charge people.
That was Wells Fargo.
Yeah. Right. And Bank of America too. Go look, Bank of America. Same thing. Both of them got fined in the past 5 years. Same thing. So if you're doing that, it was Wells Fargo, but look, if you look back at those fines, this is like fraud. Nobody goes to jail. Right. But yet yeah, you go after some industries, you go after some people, and there's no protection there, and they make it like they're protecting you. They're really not. So that's well, why
not only,
we have
not
a brand.
Only do they not go to jail, but they get fired, but they get a massive severance package. So yeah. They don't sue.
Absolutely. It's yeah. crazy. It's crazy. And then they'll start up another company, everyone invests in them, right? Like nothing
of course.
Happened.
Of course.
Insane.
Let's talk about the markets right now. Buyers seem to be stepping in on every dip. We had that, 5% move, but that was after a 5% move up. But okay, 5% move down, and then all of a sudden we saw people buying in. Why are investors so positive on, we'll say, generally speaking, markets right now?
They're positive for really the wrong reason, right? I mean, they see rates coming down. They believe that the Fed's going to cut, and the Fed is going to cut. You know how? Because we discussed this in the past, how I always hated that Powell would talk, and then you have basically your board of directors with all these Fed presidents go out and say whatever they want. They contradict each other. Imagine having your own company and your CEO, and you say, hey, we're going to do good, and other guys from the board say, we're not going to do good. This is the first time I can remember in history that they're all exactly on the same page saying, we're not going to cut rates, which means they're going to cut rates, right? So it is an election year. They're going to cut rates. We all know it. But I think people right now is a good environment because, it's the Goldilocks. People could say, well, the economy's doing good based on certain data. I don't think it's doing good as everybody says. But you have this middle ground that's usually good for markets where not too bullish, not too bearish. But when they cut and you look at past cycles, every past cycle, dating back 30, 40 years, the market tanks, not when they're raising rates, the market goes up. Even when they pause like they did now, it does very well. It's when they start cutting, which is weird because everyone's citing that as the catalyst of why stocks were going to surge.
What about the don't fight the Fed mantra?
Yeah, listen, it's you could counterintuitive. Don't fight the Fed.
The fact is what you're saying is when they reduce rates, the reality is the markets are thinking that things should do well. In certain areas, the markets will do better. But the fact is that's because the economy is not doing well and things
exactly.
are going to go lower.
Yes. If the Fed's cutting, it means that the economy is not doing that well. And I don't care how you spin it. If people are spending less, the economy is not doing well and people are losing jobs, which you're starting to see in the job market right now. Even if you look under the hood, which you and I do in the boring part of this data, everyone's going to say, wow, unemployment was low and it's great. We see people laying off like crazy. The largest technology companies of the world trading near all-time highs are laying off. We've never seen that. You spend more when you're doing better. Mm-hmm. You don't cut spending and cut employees, and that's what they're doing. But when you look under the hood at those numbers, you could see these are people who have part-time jobs that are getting a second job. This isn't from people who are on the sidelines that are getting full-time jobs with all the growth. So you're starting to see that roll over in the past couple of numbers. Jobless claims are going higher. We saw unemployment rate go higher, weeks.
Yeah, 3.8, 3.9, not a big deal. But still, the inflation numbers inside are problematic because they're not slowing down. In fact, I would say that the Fed has unfortunately backfired on themselves. And what has happened is that the recent between PPI, PCE, CPI, wage growth data, internal prices paid in manufacturing data, higher, 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 higher. They shot themselves in the foot a little bit.
Yeah, because what could you do? It says that you can't lower rates and now you're seeing an economic slowdown. So they're hoping that the economic slowdown that they're going to see is going to result in, the jobs market getting worse. It's going to result in, the market coming down a little bit more. And this way they could justify it. But it's hard to justify because even now they've announced that, they're going to take money left over to repurchase treasuries, right? So, which is still easing, right? So you're supposed to be tightening and you're easing it. And for them, their goal was to slow down the economy to control inflation. And they're having trouble slowing down to the level where they're going to get to 2%. They're not going to get to 2%. They're just not. It's not going to be feasible to get 2%. And by the way, you know this, and I know probably a lot of your listeners know this. I'll say it anyway. Just because inflation goes down to 2%, you're still paying 30, 40% more mm-hmm. over the past 4 years, mm-hmm. right? And so even though it's coming down, you're still seeing inflation go higher. It's just going higher at a slower rate. It would be nice if inflation declined 5%, 7%, right? We'd still be paying much higher prices. But it's starting to hit people now because that's what higher interest rate does. It doesn't hit them right away because your expenses start going up and you're like, wow. And then a month or two, now it's like 4 or 5 months. Now it's like, wow, this is really starting to hit me. I got to cut back. And every major company, if you're looking on the retailer, if you look at Target, you look at Kohl's, you look at Walmart, even Costco, listen, they're starting to trade down. We're seeing, and it's not just coming from the lower income consumers, it's the middle income consumers that are starting to trade down now. And you're seeing that across the board with so
many
companies.
Which, by the way, may or may not be resulted, the resulting facts, what you're telling me, may not be represented in the stocks. We saw what happened, for example, I was talking about this in the open. Netflix drops like a rock after earnings, good or bad, whatever, back up to where it was. Meta, back up to where it was. I mean, it's interesting that there still is this mantra of who cares. And we talked about this before we came on here. I talked about this in the opening. You know, people are looking past. I said, you know, the stuff that's close in hand, they're not focusing on that like they used to. They're looking much longer term.
Yeah, but I noticed something with this earnings season. I mean, if you're looking at the expectations are important because there's a lot of companies that have very, very high expectations that are reporting. And when you're seeing it, I think Airbnb, the Ubers, you know, I thought they reported really Norwegian. They reported good results and their stock still got hit. Netflix, I thought, reported good results and the stock got hit. And it's a good buying opportunity for those names. But and even the reverse of that with Tesla. Tesla was down 40% going into that quarter. I mean, you were right on your thesis if you said Tesla was going to crash and high, you know, they're lowering prices, China, you know, all this competition, whatever. But it was priced in. The expectations were so low.
Fully what happened?
They reported numbers that weren't really that good. Elon Musk is a genius of saying the right things during the quarter and the stock popped. But the reverse is happening. So, and what's really happening is if you have high expectations and you miss, man, I mean, you're seeing these massive.
What about Spotify? Shopify.
Shopify, you saw Roblox, you saw Lazy Boy. I mean, now you're getting annihilated, right? So it's tough, but you could see where the cream's rising to the top, where if some of these names, especially big technology names that are doing good, like the Amazons and the Microsofts and really benefiting
all-time
from AI.
All-time high midweek last week.
Yeah. So if you're seeing that and those things pull back on good results, you know, it's turned out to be a buying opportunity, but not for all stocks. You better report some good numbers.
Yep. I want to talk about a particular stock that you have, your thesis on it, and it's kind of interesting, this name and why you picked this. But we're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk to our everybody about something important, and then I really want to pick your brain about that. But I also want to talk about, oh my God, here we go, AI. So hang on, we're going to talk about that. So let's talk about Interactive Brokers, because Interactive Brokers is the professional's gateway to the world markets. Interactive Brokers offers commissions starting at USD zero and U.S. listed stocks and ETFs also with low commissions and other products. There are fees at no added spreads, ticket charges, account minimums. Clients in over 200 countries and territories trade stocks, options, futures, currencies, bonds, funds, and more on 150 global markets from a single unified platform. In addition, clients earn interest rates of up to USD 4.83% on instantly available cash and pay margin rates up to 49% lower than the industry. You can also earn extra income on your lendable shares. And IBKR's powerful, award-winning trading platforms help every level investor succeed, from beginner to advanced on mobile, web, and desktop. Find out more at IBKR.com. And we're back with Frank Curzio from Curzio Research, CurzioResearch.com. Make sure you listen to that. Of course, also his fine podcast, which is almost... did I tell you we dated back to March 7th of 2007?
2007, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Wall Street Unplugged. Yeah. Wow.
Right there. You're right there. Same thing.
Long time.
Listen, so here's the deal. I want to talk about a name that you have highlighted. I asked you to give me the thesis on this, and I'm kind of curious why you're picking this one. Mm-hmm. Penn Entertainment.
Yes. Penn Entertainment, I like.
What? PENN, right?
Yeah. I like it a lot. I mean, what was it? $130 a share. It's down about 40% year to date. They just reported and it pulled back, but now you're seeing the company start to gain traction again. And I really, really like this name because I like where the price is, right? I think you could do very, very well with this name. And I wish I had a formula because people say, you know, what exactly do you look at? And I wish I could say, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. It's a variety of factors. And you're going to see when I tell you about the stock because it missed the last two quarters. And when you see it, like, wow, they missed the numbers, Frank. I don't know if that's that good or whatever. You have to look under the hood a little bit and see why they missed the numbers. And the reason why they missed the numbers is because they added so many new names. So they have the account, the ESPN Bet. That's their betting platform, right? So they're competing with two of the biggest, you know, the FanDuels and everything. ESPN is massive. So, I mean, just a massive site. I mean, if you're not familiar with going on ESPN and those numbers, they have 200 million loyal followers. They have 28 million active users just on their ESPN Bet site. And everything that goes into them that they're going to be betting goes through ESPN, right? That's mm-hmm. Everyone's ESPN is going to be seen. That's all over. If you go on ESPN right now, ESPN Bet is there, and that's run by Penn. So now they just launched this service as of, I think it was like December, right? So not too long ago. And they had these projections of, hey, you know, we're probably going to get a million and a half people in a year. This is going to be a big growth thing. What happens is they added a million and a half in 5 months, right? Much, much faster than expected. Now, so this is why they missed earnings. Because if you look at the return of ad spend, you're spending a lot of money up front. These guys, it costs a lot of money up front because you're saying, hey, you're going to get $100 free. If you do this, $100 free. But they know their numbers. When these guys come on, they're like, okay, in 3 months, we're going to break even. Or maybe it's 6 months, we're going to break even. In 9 months, we're going to be up this. In 12 months, in two, three, they're going to record these massive, massive profits, right? That's when you're looking on return on ad spend. So the fact that they're getting punished because they have so many of these names is insane, because they didn't think they were going to add that many names, and they added them, and it costs money out of pocket to add those. That's fine, because they're giving them money to go on the platform at the beginning. Now you have these gamblers all on this, and we know what happens, right? These guys are going to bet. There's so many games coming up. You got the Olympics coming up. You got all playoffs going on. So now
and you could bet, I think, even on Skee Bowl now at Dave and Buster's.
You could bet on anything, seriously. Right?
Who bets on Skee Bowl?
Side bets. Ugh. I mean, it's insane. So when I look at what this company is doing, the growth ahead and how much growth they're going to see, it's incredible. So, you know, they just launched in North Carolina, launch in New York soon. When they're going to, again, high losses up front, but the results are going to come in the back half of the year. And they just signed in the chief technology officer. They just hired from Disney ESPN, who has 30 years of experience. So they hired the guy who's part of their major growth model, who knows everything about ESPN. This is a stock, I think, if you're going to buy in the 17, you're going to be really happy. And plus, you have the CFO just went in there buying shares as well. So you've seen some insiders buy it. And it's low expectations. Only 50% of the analysts have buy ratings. I mean, to me, I think it's a joke at 17. I think I recommended it. Now we have a full position in it. And David Einhorn just came out after us and said, you know, that's like his newest position, I think, is Penn Gaming.
He's interesting. He's a gambler, by the way. Extraordinary.
Yeah.
Well, is Dave Portnoy involved in this at all anymore?
No. He had the deal of a lifetime and became a billionaire and basically, you know, bought the company back for like a dollar. And they just, you know what it was with their gambling?
The Barstool.
For Barstool. I'm a big fan of his, really. It's just, you know, some people like him, some people like him. I think he's entertaining. I think he's genuine. He does a lot of stuff raising money for cops who've been.
He's a genuine prick, by the way, but go ahead.
Yeah, I kind of like him. I mean, some people don't. He roast people the wrong way.
He's a little abrasive.
Yeah, but you know, who isn't these days? Who wants attention? Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, they couldn't market their online betting platform with him there, and he knew it. So they had to get rid of him. So they just cut that off. That's in the past. Whatever, you know, you don't have to worry about if you like him or not. It has nothing to do with Portnoy anymore. But this is a name that I just really like. It's just really beaten up for the wrong reasons. I mean, you're telling me these guys added a ton of new names. They're going to be making a fortune on going forward. And there's a lot of marketing dollars behind it. They're good balance sheet. It's just a name that I really like. I think it's
so the name that you haven't liked for a long time is Disney, right?
Yes, I don't like Disney. I mean, I liked it.
ESPN, which Disney owns. It's kind of a weird thing that you're hating and loving at the same time.
Yeah, listen, they have a lot of users. They just can't really grow ESPN, right? They're having trouble growing ESPN, and they're trying to launch a platform where with ESPN specifically in their streaming, they used to make a fortune on because it was included in all these crazy cable bundles. Now that you strip it out, they want to charge separate for it. And they're saying in order to make the same amount of money that they were making, because everyone's going to streaming, so they have to charge probably $30 a month for it. And ESPN doesn't carry all the sports. So when I look at ESPN as a business, I don't see them like losing that many people. It's just very hard to grow.
And by the way, screw them, to be honest with you, because this whole streaming thing, tell me I'm wrong about this, but this whole thing was, you know, let's do skinny bundles, let's separate, let's have our own platform, you know, while we're still screwing you, by the way, for TV too, right? We have all that. We just want to get another subscription, and all these streaming companies, all they try to do is screw us.
Yes.
So screw them. And
so not all of them. I mean, I don't know if you saw the Tom Brady live event on Netflix. I thought it was fantastic. It was really cool. It's really dirty too, but some people, it was edgy. It was just nice to see comedy where there's no restrictions. They went after anyone and you don't have to worry about getting canceled.
You say it was dirty. It was pretty dirty.
Yeah, it was, I mean, anyone said anything and it was, I mean, just prepare you if you don't like that, but I thought it was very funny.
I mean, I'm just asking.
You just dying to use that thing, huh? If you watch, it's 3 hours actually. If you watch that, you're gonna be using that probably about, but you probably wouldn't hear like 80% of it. That's how crazy it was.
That's funny.
But Netflix has got this right, and the key to streaming is what? Is one thing. It's new content. It doesn't care about how big your library is. People aren't gonna watch movies 25 times, right? They want new content. Mm-hmm. And you know, when it comes to Netflix, the whole world, if you saw how many celebrities are there, they're all promoting their shows coming up on Netflix. Disney is going all in on this model that they can't make work because all of their new content comes out in the movies first, right? Yeah. And now they say, well, we're getting streaming better and we're starting to come, you know, profitable, but it's at a huge expense because they're not spending on new content and they're bleeding subscribers. That's why they came out and warned, right, that they're not going to meet their numbers in a DTC segment, direct to consumer, which is streaming. And now what do you do? So you have a crappy garbage service, right now, because you don't have new content. And how do you make it better? I'm going to raise prices on everyone and throw ads all over it. So this has nothing to do with the consumer, right? And they just signed a deal with Time Warner and they didn't even give the pricing, like, you know, because they want to partner with every single company, even over the past couple of weeks. If you look at Paramount's trying to ssell itself, they're not going to sell themselves. They have an $8 billion market cap with $18 billion in debt.
Yeah.
Okay. They're not going to be able to sell themselves.
Those numbers don't work.
You have, I mean, Time Warner's losing tremendous amount of money. They're not even growing revenue. They'll say, oh, we're growing subscribers. It doesn't matter. We learned that with Disney. They were growing subscribers because they were giving the service away free. Okay. Eventually you have to have revenue behind that. Netflix is so far out ahead of everyone in this industry that no one else can really make it work. And these guys are dying. But what scares me about Disney is Disney right now going all in on streaming. They are competing against who? They're competing against Netflix. Mm-hmm. They're competing against Google. Mm-hmm. Right, with YouTube TV, yep. Especially with their Amazon. Hulu division. Yep. They're competing with Amazon. They're competing with guys that have, this is their side business, and they have $100 billion. Apple generates $100 billion plus in free cash flow every year. I mean, you're looking at Google, $50, $60 billion in free cash. These guys have a ton of money to put behind these things, to buy the sports packages, and this is their growth model. I mean, Disney hasn't grown. You could say their earnings grown. It's been a cost-cutting strategy since COVID, to fast 4 years, right? Getting it in order, cut costs.
First they duped everybody with how many subscriptions they had. And most of those are probably free.
You and I identified that
in the beginning, by the way.
Yes. Yeah, I was all over that. I mean, it was because that's why they're getting rid of like that Hotstar division, which is where they get like 50 cents per subscriber, $1 per subscriber. And they did that. Chapek did it to pad the numbers because he's smart. He said, well, Wall Street doesn't even care what the average revenue per user. They just want to see how many subscribers. And we're up to 60 million, 100 million, 200 million. We have more than Netflix. They're not paying anything. Their average revenue per user was like $6. Netflix is 18. You know, it's a big deal. So, you know, and just for Disney here, that's your growth model. And we're not talking about buying a stock that's cheap. It's trading at 24 times forward earnings. So my advice to you, why would you ever buy Disney here when you could buy Google, get your streaming fix, and yet you have cloud and AI in two of the biggest long-term secular growth markets and Google's trading at a cheap valuation. Why would you buy Disney for when you could buy Google? You
know, and of course, that dovetails us right into the, and Google has AI or something like it, maybe.
Yeah.
Amazing, after all of the missteps that Google had with their Bard, with the things, with the wrong planets, wrong systems, all this stuff, right? And with painting pictures that were wrong, and that they hit an all-time high after their earnings.
Yeah. I mean, the numbers are great. They got it right. They're going to come out. I mean, guys, pay attention because over the next month, several weeks, right? You have the developers conferences coming up, which are massive. Because think about NVIDIA with what they said that their event, right? Their new chip that they're launching, and that was such a big deal. You have Google. This is May 14th, right? Not too far from now. Microsoft, right? It's going to be the 21st. Apple's June 10th, and
NVIDIA's earnings on the 22nd.
Yeah, they're all going to be talking about you know, all their AI programs and everything. And for me, I've been really, really deep in this trend, and I'm fascinated by it. Someone who's very skeptical, I'm fascinated by it, but in ways that not everyone else is fascinated. So I'm not talking about NVIDIA's. I'm not talking, AMD's not even an AI play. Everybody thinks.
We shorted them. Yeah. We're like bull. I'll tell you what we were. We were like bull. You know what I'm saying? I'm sorry, it's the theme of the show, it seems. But seriously, the idea that they came out with this whole AI push, trying to be competitors, but they didn't have a product. It was like, what? And it was eaten up by the street.
And it was trading at a 40% premium to NVIDIA, whose earnings went from $5 to $22 a share.
So ridiculous.
They are an AI, right? They've been planning this for 10, 15 years, where they're not really a hardware company. It's like, we're going to help you build this. You don't need coders. We're just going to help you build this. You build it to how you want it. And we're going to supply the chips and we're going to help you on the software side. And it's just been unbelievable with the partnerships. But when you look at AI, I think people look at companies that are, you know, what's the direct plays, right? Is Microsoft going to benefit with Copilot or whatever in Google? To me, it's I'm seeing small caps use this technology. They're not AI companies, just like Amazon is not an internet company, right? They're not. At the beginning, oh, this internet company. They're not identified by an internet company. These companies have several. We've created a portfolio. It's called Curzio AI, and it's small caps, and they're using AI within their division. So it's not going to come up on screens or anything, but we identified three names. There's like 15 names altogether right now in a building. But the fact, some of these guys are getting AI right, and they've got it right over the past year, year and a half, 2 years. And they're seeing tremendous benefits. Well, one small logistics company I recommended is seeing $1 million in cost savings. That's 6% increase in earnings a year in a world where it's very hard for a lot of companies to grow earnings.
What is it? Basically, right? Optimization of the logistics?
Optimization of the, but it's basically telling, it's so using AI, it's machines learning from machines almost at this point. It's incredible. So say you're a shipper, you come out, you're a shipper, then now you go to the trucking companies or whatever. So they're running the logistics, and they can go to all these companies and say, just like you remember during COVID, for me, I ordered a mattress. It took 6 months, mm-hmm. right? Which usually takes 6 weeks. Everything that you order, furniture or whatever, takes a while to get there. What happens if you have systems that are telling you the best routes and they're like, okay, using these guys, they're charging you whatever, X amount, $10,000, and they're going to get there in 3 weeks. I can get there in a week and it's going to cost you $6,000. Who are you going to use?
Right.
This is what this is capable of doing. If you're looking at one of the biggest benefits, and I'm hoping that this happens, is drug discovery. Okay. You have all these compounds, millions of compounds, and I don't know how familiar you are with the process of bringing a drug from clinical.
No, clearly. No. It's first of all, it's the discovery part, which this can cut down. If you have AI that's doing discovery on silicone, as we call it, right? Mm-hmm. The man hours and woman in person hours trying to figure out all the possibilities is cut into, I don't even know, 90%?
Yeah, let me tell you the numbers, okay? Because it costs $2 billion to bring a drug to market. It takes 13 years, and you only have a patent for 20. So you wonder why they charge so much is because so much goes into launching these things. And if you're wrong, especially later on at the phase 3 level, you get annihilated, right, with your costs. Mm-hmm. So imagine this only costs $300 million in 5 years. There's a company that has a small cap company. Again, I don't want to give this away because people pay for it, that has 160 people just in their AI division. It's a small cap drug discovery company. And also they have stake in the game where they're taking royalties. And it's not just, hey, AI is going to do this for you, which is going through the computer part, which is called dry lab. They have a wet lab. They're taking these compounds and testing them and saying, here, we just showed you what you could do. And now you saw two largest companies, Novo Nordisk, sign a deal with them. And they're getting like all these deals now, because if you could take some of these compounds, it's so hard for a drug company to do this because it costs them a fortune. If it costs them less, there's going to be more shots on goal to cure so many of the crazy diseases that are out there. That's what's exciting when it comes to AI. But you're not going to know this company's an AI play. So you have to really, as someone to me covers all these stocks, listens to conference calls, you could see the benefits and you're like, wow. And then you really, really dig into their presentations and stuff. You see what they're doing within AI. They're not AI companies, but they're using AI within their divisions to not just cut costs or use them for customer service, but to use with their operations. And then it's providing inference that's showing you where it's going to go. That's the predictability part. And that's what I'm fascinated from, where we just, I mean, we're not even in the first inning of this freaking thing.
The only problem, that's great. The only thing that also, let me just kind of bring up the other side, the dark side of AI.
Mm-hmm. And there is.
There is. Because everybody's an AI company now.
Everybody.
Everybody's
an AI company.
They should change their name. Microsoft.ai or CampbellSoup.ai. And the fact is, I mean, are we just spam? Spam came out. Oh, the Hormel, they're going to, these other companies are going to, I'm like, what is Campbell's Soup doing with AI? I don't understand. So,
for me, what was exciting is I go to Consumer Electronics Show every year. I think I've been going there for like 12 years now. That's in January in Vegas, second week, where all the companies present all their products, like 4,000 technology companies, and what they're going to launch, over the next 3-6 months for the year. And I went on a special executive tour. I pay a lot of money for it. And it was probably 50 companies went to go see. And even out of the 4,500 that were there, I'd say maybe 3,500, 3,700 said we had AI. We're using AI. But even the companies that I saw, they were all like, this is what we're doing with AI. And I asked them all the same question. Where are you getting the data from? Well, we're going to, if you don't have the data, AI doesn't work.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
So you have to, that's why when you look at the largest technology companies, they stole your data already. They stole it and they got away with it. Right. I don't mean to sound cynical or anything. It's true. Right. But you didn't even know that they were taking your data. Now, if someone asks you in a disclaimer, could we send this to third party? You're going to say no. But yet if you buy a new laptop, the default settings are set up for them to take every piece of information from you and sell to third parties and track you. And every, you have to shut those off on every new computer, laptop that you buy. That's all Microsoft. That's all Hewlett Packard or whoever's making the computer and the software behind Microsoft. They have the data, social media platforms. They have the data. They know every single data point. Amazon for 20 years, 25 years, they're tracking everything that you bought. They know everything that you're going to do. And you know the predictability behind it is just incredible. Those companies are going to benefit. But if you're looking for smaller companies, you have to make sure that they have the data. If they don't, and they say AI, they're perfectly full of, yeah, hit your button. There you go.
yeah, there you go. What's interesting is, though, that so many of them have come out with this. Like AMD is a poster child of it, in my opinion, coming out with this whole thing that they wanted to, you know, ride the coattails and slipstream NVIDIA's success. And it was just like, oh. And I started looking at all these other companies that were talking about it and then looking at, well, what is the AI play here? Is it just – and by the way, Apple – recently came out with a discussion last week that they're using internal chips for their AI enhancement, let's say. But, you know, in a weird way, isn't Siri AI already? Isn't that what it would be?
Not necessarily.
Why? What do you mean?
Not necessarily. Because it's just basically, you know, it's answering your question for you. It's like a generative AI, but it's the inference that makes a difference. And here's why I tell you why I think Apple's screaming by here if someone didn't really like Apple too much. I know the iPhone sales are down. I know China sales are down. I get it. It's still an expensive company. When they come up with their developers conference, they missed this boat so bad that now they're getting into it. They release early versions of their first AI feature, a Gemini program, and it's competing with Google's Gemini, the Claude 3, which is Anthropic, and also... ChatGPT 4, right, which is Microsoft. So it's competing with them right now, and it's doing absolutely amazing. Here's where Apple is going to make a fortune in one of the best AI plays. Because AI, you carry their device around. It's 3 feet away from you every second of your life, mm-hmm. right? Think about what you could do with they have billions of pictures. Anyone that has cloud, anything on the cloud, that's the data, right? They have a massive amount on the cloud. So think about all the pictures that you have a professional camera on there. I mean, Samsung's already doing this, right? But now you're going to have a camera with all of your pictures and everything. Now you're not going to have to crop anything or do anything. You're going to be like, you know what? You just took a beautiful picture of you and your wife. Okay. You know what? Add background, add this, do this, you know, make this brighter, make her face brighter, put in like, you know, whatever feature, make a short movie.
Make
off
me
of it.
Thinner.
Do anything that you can want that younger. You're going to tell it to do through Siri and they're going to do it. And that to me, I mean, when you're generating $100 billion of free cash flow, you have $60 billion in cash in the balance sheet, you have enough money to go all in on this thing. And that's what they're going to do. And I think in that June developers conference, you're going to see this. I think it's going to be the most exciting conference you see from Apple since the first launch of the iPhone.
Yeah. Well, there you have it, folks, right there. Frank is pounding the table on Apple.
Yeah, I do like Apple. I liked it even before the quarter, which it did very well, but I still think it's going to go a lot higher and hit new highs, especially... into that announcement and after that announcement, because they're going to have some exciting stuff that they're going to
Apple could definitely use a better camera.
I don't know. I have a really good camera on it, man. I don't know.
Have you seen the Samsungs? I mean, their pictures look pretty good.
I don't know. I have the brand new one.
I have the Apple 15 Pro.
And you don't like the camera on it?
It's fine. It does a great job. No. I'm
you
just saying.
Take cameras through your, you have to take pictures through your video.
I have to take pictures through my video? What does that even mean?
Yeah. That means that instead of taking a picture, hit the video and then you could go in and out and then hit the button. And the resolution is like, you'll see like the pores on someone's face.
How do I get a picture and then take a picture off of that?
There's a little button there that you could take 100 pictures if you want, or you could just take the video and freeze the frame and take the picture off of that. But look at the quality when you do it with a video compared to when you just do it with the picture.
Huh.
Holy cow.
Really?
I mean, it's the greatest thing in the world.
Makes
yeah.
No
take
sense.
The video and then you could, there's a little button that you could take pictures as the video is playing. Just do that once and you're going to see it compared to another picture and the lighting and everything.
Are you you're saying take a snapshot of the pic of
you're taking a picture as it. So if you hit video, there's a little thing.
Oh yeah. The little white thing.
And you hit that button. That's taking a picture and then take those pictures, especially at a concert or something. You're just hitting it. Cause you know, this way it's almost not a blast. And the next thing you know, you'll have like, you know, 15 pictures and two or three of them. You're gonna be like,
I'm going to try this Frank. And I'm going to let you know.
Look at that. Nice.
I'm going to let you know, but still we don't have make me look thinner and younger yet is what you're saying.
I expand the picture out. It makes me look a little thinner when I expand it.
You got it.
You know, and make it, you know, just longer, I think. It makes me look a little thinner.
Right.
It doesn't work that good, though. I wish it worked better.
Well, there's only so much so much this supercomputer power could do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Asking too much there.
All right. So let's talk about, we talked about Amazon, Microsoft, Google. We talked about Apple as a play. We talked about the Fed. You said, mentioned they're going to rate cut. Well, it's an, you said it's an election year, so they're gonna have to cut rates. What? Why are you saying that?
You know what? The fact that I've never seen this before, and you follow the Fed probably more than me, right? I mean, you used to put up things like, this is what they said this time compared to last time.
I'm so sick of them.
Yeah, I've never seen, usually you see these guys all over the place, right? Trying to make a name for themselves. Oh, well, we think we should cut, or you know, how many dissented, right? Who are bearish compared to bullish, or a dovish, right? Whatever, compared to hawkish. They all like got a script and they're saying the same exact thing.
Yep.
We're not,
yep.
And what the Fed
the
says
indoctrination.
Is much more powerful than what they do because they predict what they're going to do. So if they have this thing like, look, we're not cutting. Yeah, the market's going to start to believe that, even though they haven't believed that for 2 years, 18 months. But for me, for them to be on that same page, I think we're going to see our first rate cut before the election. I definitely do. I give it probably 80% chance.
Even if all the data stays the same?
I think the data is going to start rolling over. I mean, it really is. With my podcast and your podcast, I mean, it goes out to 100 countries. I talk to tons of people. I have lots of friends. I pay attention to this stuff because I love it. When I shouldn't, I should be enjoying life a little bit more, but I'm always looking at these research details. There are people that are cutting back significantly right now. There are people that don't have jobs, haven't had jobs in a while. It's not this full employment thing that everybody thinks. But just the housing market has been frozen. I mean, if you're going to sell your house, why are you going to sell your house for on average $500,000 in Florida? You're not going to get a house for that anymore. And then you're going to buy a 3% mortgage.
3%.
And you're going to buy $500,000.
Well, I'll tell you what happened, though. Listen, the case Shiller came out. It was a 7.5% increase on the 20 city year over year just last week.
Yeah, because there's no supply.
However, I think what happened was, I agree with you with that, but also there has to be some demand there on top of it, right? That's more than it was since it went up from a 6.5% or whatever to 7. Here's the point. I think people got lulled into this idea that, you know what, I'm not buying that $500,000 house because it's an 8% mortgage. And you know what? This is over my price range. I'm not doing it. Then all of a sudden, with what the Fed did back in November or so, where they pretty much claimed victory on it. And I think people say, you know what? I'm going to buy that $500,000 house. I'm going to pay the 8% because you know what? I'll refinance in a year because the Fed's going to reduce rates.
I know. That's what people are thinking. They're crazy. I could tell you, though, if you look at the details, I always say looking under the hood, if you look at what's selling right now, there's a reason why we've never seen the home builders hit all-time highs when you had interest rates
unbelievable
like this, right?
Unbelievable.
And the reason is because for the first time in history, the average price of a new house is lower than the average price of an existing house. And you might get a little bit less square footage. Now you have these new homes that are going on the market that everyone's buying. They're looking at existing homes and going, why am I going to buy a 30, 40, 50 year home when I could buy a new one? Again, a little bit less square footage. So now they're buying them and now they're getting special incentives and deals to take out lower loans at better interest rates. So that's where you're seeing a lot of demand from, which is important because now these are people that have cash on the sidelines and fun. These aren't people selling their homes. And when you sell a home and buy a new one, you know, the amount of money that requires where the new person coming in, they're going to spend on all new things. The new person getting the house going to spend on all new things. You're buying all this stuff. You're not seeing that. That's even with the data. If you're looking at Home Depot and Lowe's, which you're seeing, you know, those companies, you know, report weaker than expected numbers, kind of not that the record numbers anymore. So just where it's coming from, it's like we look at the data like everything's okay, but you have to really analyze the data, right? I mean, you could say Donald Trump lost the most jobs in the history of the world. I mean, well, you know, we made sure nobody worked because of COVID. So, you know, it's a fact to say that, but it's really not true and relevant. So it depends how you look at the stats and you want to look at them to the point from a perspective where for
objectively,
stock, but not objectively, not just that. You want to look at them and say, okay, is this not trading on stats because of this? Because this is what's really happening. And if you could figure that out, like with Disney, okay, this stock is trading. This is when I made a lot of money on Disney shorting it. You know, Disney's, are they trading because of all these new subscribers that are coming in? Because nobody is understanding that they're not paying for the service. So eventually you're not going to be making your numbers ever because they're not paying for the service. So you could say, yeah, they're the biggest streaming company in the world. But, you know, the fact is they're not generating any money off it because they're getting a lot of those subscribers for free. So it's how you interpret the data.
Yep. Let's move to one of my favorite topics. You're not going to believe this, but we're going to talk to Frank about crypto. We're talking about Bitcoin, and talk about he has a a pretty high price tag on it for the future outcome of where we're going to be. So what is it? Is this, by the way, is this crypto or is this Bitcoin?
Both.
Okay.
And let me be specific. I'm not talking about meme coins. I'm not talking about garbage, because have you ever bought Bitcoin?
Yeah, crypto? I own Bitcoin as a small amount, but I own Ethereum in a larger chunk.
Cool. Okay. And some people own that, but the news that you would see in crypto, I mean, think about FTX. Could you let me know, and anyone listening to your podcast, frankkerzerresearch.com, you can email me. FTX just announced that their customers are going to get paid 118% of their money back.
I love that.
Have you ever seen in the history of our country where a company went bankrupt and paid those people and their customers over 100%, not even 100%? I mean, usually you get nothing back, right? They're paying like 98-99% of their creditors. Have you ever seen? It just shows you how much money that they were making.
Well, plus they had the backstop of Bitcoin, and then it went up in value dramatically.
Tremendously. And yeah. And also what happens is they painted a nice story for you. Again, what you read in the media, like, oh, their liquid assets are in the negative by whatever it was, $8 to $10 billion. Well, what about their illiquid investors, which were investments in Anthropic, which is the greatest Claude 3, by far the best AI system in the world right now, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and a lot of these other cryptos. So when you look at crypto, they're software companies. The top 100 are amazing companies. I mean, these are great, great names that make sense, right? And they're not, you know, securities or anything, but you know, they get lumped in with a lot of the garbage and all the craziness. Now, when you look after the halving, which is a major event, happens every 4 years. If you're not familiar with the halving, it reduces supply growth in half. What that means is, say, Tesla is making a special edition car and they're selling 100 of them for $1 million. There's a line around the corner, you know, millions of people want it. They're only selling 100. Well, now Tesla says going forward, we're only going to sell 500. What do you think it's going to be? What do you think they're going to pay for that, right? It's going to go up tremendously, right?
Well, you went from 150, not 500, 150. You cut your supply in half, is the point. You said...
No, so, you're cutting your supply. Yeah, if you cut your supply in half, right? So if you only have half of those to sell, how much do you think they're going to sell for? And this is keeping demand the same.
This is right? Let's just be clear. This is not cutting the outstanding Bitcoin in circulation.
No, supply growth.
It's going to be right? cutting That's, and it making it more growth. Difficult for the miners, right? More electricity pull, more calculation power. So in other words, they're not going to be discovering or mining as many because it's a half.
There's less new Bitcoin available for people to buy.
Just wanted people to understand.
There's only going to be 450 amount per day, only 450 Bitcoin per day. And you have places like BlackRock that were buying 1,000 a day as soon as the ETFs were launched. 3,000 altogether. I mean, if you're looking. So now you have less. So anyone that's holding it, you know, there's less supply growth. It's 21 million coins, but there's less supply coming to the market, right? Mm-hmm. So with that less supply, now what happens is after the first 18 months, you always saw Bitcoin go through the roof, but then you saw this massive crash because demand kind of waned, right? Now you have all these ETFs. Now you're not going to see demand wane. Now you're seeing demand. Now you just created a secular market of demand. So what has happened with Bitcoin to me is guaranteed to go to 100,000. I'm not going to tell you it's going to do that in a month. I know people have 1.5 million targets. Some people think it's going to go 150 this year. I don't care. I know it's going to go there probably within 18 months, 24 months. And when it does, even over the next 24 months, what we know is Bitcoin surges on average 600% after each halving, right? Maybe it goes up to 100, 300%. But if you strip out Bitcoin, the rest of the market goes up 3x compared to that. And it makes sense because that's what happens when uranium goes through the roof like it's going. You see, you know, when an underlying commodity or something goes higher, it's usually like the garbage that's going to go much, much higher, right? And I'm not saying these are garbage, but you're getting a chance to buy the Microsofts, you're getting a chance to buy the Amazons and Nvidias, the good names at a significant discount right now without taking on the major risk of a lot of things out there. If you want me to give one away, Chainlink is an amazing company. Blockchains are separate. They don't talk to each other. So when you hear that they get hacked, it's because they have bridges and they hack the bridges. You can't hack the blockchain. So now the blockchains can't communicate with each other. Now with their technology, they can communicate with each other. That's why every single bank right now, every single one's launching their own blockchains and have launched their own blockchains, and they're going to tokenize all their liquid assets. This way they could trade them and provide liquidity for them in real estate. We're talking about tens of trillions of dollars in real estate and bonds. Bonds is the worst market ever. There's no liquidity in the bond market. Now you're going to have more liquidity in it. And now these blockchains are going to be able to talk to each other. To me, that's exciting.
Well, that's a lot there. A lot to unpack, Frank Curzio.
And I'll finish with this. Can I have one more minute?
Always bring me good stuff. You can have as much time as you want.
One more minute.
You're paying me for this, right?
Everything that you're seeing in this market, right, is all these stories telling you how terrible it is. The government's coming after them for one reason. because this is the first time in pretty much the history of our markets where the banking, which is a boys club, the banking market is threatened by crypto because it's cheaper. Yes, it's safer. You wouldn't think that. If you look at the stats, it's much, much safer when it comes to crypto. I'm talking about the good cryptos and transfer money back and forth. You're paying wiring fees. The banks don't create anything. All they do is charge you a crap load of fees, right? That's what they do. And they never get in trouble for anything. There's four of the largest banks. None of the small banks could ever become, or even mid-cap bank, can never become in that class of the four largest. They don't allow it because of the capital ratios. It's the only industry where Facebook can't be disruptive and Airbnb can't be disruptive, become the biggest. NVIDIA can't, you know, remember Intel was the king 10 years, 20 years ago. This is the only industry where the laws don't allow it. That's what happened to New York Community Bank. As soon as they got over 100 billion assets, they had to increase their ratios, and that's why it crashed. Everyone was like, wow, the massive losses, because they had to put more money aside. So now you have this system that threatens, that has free services that are quicker, that are faster, that threatens the banking system. And that's why, Jamie Dimon hates it. You hear Elizabeth Warren hate it. But there's this mad rush for them to catch up. And finally, as much as they say they hate it, they're all launching their own blockchains. So, which I think, is hilarious. So this is like a serious threat and it's here. And to me, I hope it does disrupt the banks because the banks are the most corrupt organizations in the world. It's a boys club that produces nothing. They charge you a massive amount of fees. If you have an account at any of the banks right now, what are they paying you in interest? Yeah. On your savings account?
Yeah. What I'll tell you what they're paying
you. 0.2%?
0.2. I'll tell you what they're paying. They're paying you. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
That's what they're paying you.
Go to Interactive Brokers, right? Which is, you love them. 5% interest you can get right now in their accounts. I mean, why are other banks not paying that? That's why their net interest income, they're reporting record profits, $100 billion in sales, $30 billion in profits last quarter.
Yeah.
Last quarter for these banks, which is insane.
Well, like somebody once said, if reincarnation is real, when I die, I want to come back as a bank.
Yeah, it's the greatest business in the world, unless you're Peter Schiff.
Right. Yeah. Well. Oh, good jab, undercut. That was like a glancing blow right there from nowhere.
I mean, look, if you're gonna start a if anyone's gonna start a bank, the best thing to do, I'm taking a stab at it, is don't tell everyone that the system sucks, it's terrible, it's horrible, and you go to Puerto Rico where there's no taxes and you're shouting at the top how every bank's terrible. Because everybody's going to come after you, right? So just, be smart. If you're going to do something, you got to play the game.
It is.
And if you're not going to play the game, it's going to blow up in your face. So.
Yep. Frank Curzio, CurzioResearch.com. How else can people get in touch with you?
You can email FrankCurzioResearch.com. Like I said, Curzio Research, my podcast.
Listen a second. You slide that all together. I can't even honestly understand it.
Frank@CurzioResearch.com.
Thank you.
FrankCurzioResearch.com.
FrankCurzioResearch.com. Frank, thanks for joining me. Listen, everybody, thanks for joining me again for another great episode of The Disciplined Investor. We'll be back next week with another great guest. And we're here for you. And of course, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Check out all the things there are to offer and find out more about what we do on a regular basis here. Thanks so much for joining me. I'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates or partners.